Hey there, this is Mike the Storycrafter from the Steamrollers Adventure Podcast, and you're listening to the Thread Raiders.
And I'm Robbie.
And I am Boris.
Robbie, what the hell is he doing here?
He is part of our show. Thread Raiders has three, and so do we.
He is not part of our show. He's a pain in my ass.
Hey, Michael, just give him a chance.
Okay, fine, but just one, because we've got to make it quick. Just one chance. Go.
Okay, Boris, go.
You are listening to Thread Raiders Podcast, which means you are smart. Only stupid dickheads listen to Steam Crapper Show.
Robbie, in the car. Now!
What?
Welcome to the Thread Raiders Podcast, where some of your notifications' least favorite Twitter users get together and talk about whatever pops off the top of their heads. I'm your host, Captain Sugar Bear. With me today is Shrieky.
Bob, what you waiting for? If you want a 3, 2, 1, let's hit it!
And Grifolian.
Slam dunk the funk. No, hello, good day.
Yes.
And with us today, we have our special guest, Larry, we want to introduce yourself.
Good morning, Thread Raiders! Hello, this is Larry Haydorn, also LJ Haydorn. And I am a fellow podcaster as well as an author. So I do a podcast known as Scribbler's Rest, RPG board game podcast. We do it on YouTube, and for all the videos and everything else is on Spotify, iTunes, you name it.
Damn, so, Spotify. Nice.
Nice.
Yes. Yeah. We're hosted by the Project Entertainment Network. So.
Oh, yeah. I've seen them around.
Oh, yes. Yeah. They do a ton of stuff. I think we're their only RPG podcast, but they try to diversify what they have. They have duplicates of a lot of different things or near duplicates. So, awesome. And then I've been dabbling in the writing world. I've been, going and writing epic fantasy books.
Oh, nice.
So, very nice. Currently, two very small little pieces out there in Amazon world, and working on finishing the edits and everything else on the first novel. But I'm not going to release it until I've got three novels written. That way, someone feels justified in buying that first book, knowing the other two are right behind it for the trilogy.
You don't want to George R. R. Martin them?
He had quite the background already by the time he got out there. So
yep, a lot of background but no book.
No.
Well, thank you for that. Just as a reminder to our listeners, we are sponsored by DiceBard. Make sure to go to dicebard.com, check out their selection of metal dice, glow in the dark dice, those rainbow dice that I always talk about because they're fantastic. They've got the gift cards on their site. Just make sure that when you order something from them, you use the discount code THREADRAIDERS. That's one word, THREADRAIDERS, to get free expedited shipping on your order. It's a little free something for you, and it does help our show. So we do appreciate you, going and being a patron there of Dice Bard. And with that, we are going to jump into our topics. Larry, as the guest, we do want to start with your topic. What do you have for us today?
Yeah, I was thinking, about experience in games. A lot of the games have experience based upon what you kill and doing different skills and building things up. And there also is another venue out there of getting experience based upon goals. So I was thinking about what people thought about either one of those and which one they preferred over the other.
So to start it off, what's your preference then?
You know, for years, I have been doing experience based upon kills and doing different skills and everything else, role-playing, all that combined together. And but I think I'm really tending to go towards more of a goals-oriented thing because it allows people to actually experience the game, a fuller game, and enjoy it more instead of saying, let's kill it in order to get experience points. So I think that's...
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to ask, would you say that's similar to like a milestone thing, like a goals-oriented system?
Exactly. It'd be exactly goals or milestone, reaching a certain point.
Right on. Yeah, I think I actually agree with you on that. I've done it both ways. I've played in a milestone system, and I've played in an XP system, and I've run an XP system because that's what the players wanted. But I think ultimately I agree with you where I like a milestone system because, you know, then there's no pressure to kill everything to try to grind out XP. You know, so this isn't Final Fantasy. This is, you know, a tabletop RPG where you have a lot, you know, infinite more options. And it's nice to be able to exercise those options. Talking is hard. by, like you said, kind of living a fuller life in that RPG and trying things, trying new things, trying different things, knowing that you still will level up when the time is right. Like when you achieve whatever the goal is, it just doesn't matter how you achieve that goal.
Yeah, you know, exactly. And I think it gives people the opportunity to say, well, you know, why should we kill that random encounter that those guards over there when, you know, really what we're after is the tower and whoever's in charge of the tower, you know. So it takes the pressure off of a lot of people by doing that.
I think I'm sort of in a bit of a middle ground here because I actually run a bit of both in my system. I have quest-based, milestone-based XP, but I also have encounter-based experience, which is not necessarily kill the things, but navigate around the things. The only time an encounter maybe wouldn't is if you go back the way you came. But if you find a way of getting beyond the obstacle via killing, via whatever option you see, then you still gain the experience. The biggest difference for me is I just I have viewed it rather than doing that, but my parties actually gain their experience upon long rests. So they actually won't level up in the middle of a day unless they find somewhere to stop and rest. Mm-hmm. And that's when they then sort of accumulate their experience. I guess maybe that is kind of a video gamey. Well, I don't know. Like, say, Final Fantasy, you just kind of level up as you go. But yeah, definitely middle of the ground there, because I still feel like there is value in encounters and for the party to say, actually, we want to get better, so we want to go and grind. It's on the party to choose to do that. Whereas with milestones, it's very difficult for them to like get stronger without following the road ahead of them, if that makes sense.
I mean, I think that depends on how you're running the game, though, too. Like, a milestone can be anything. It doesn't necessarily need to be, oh, this is the part of the story where you level up. It can, you know, very easily be, okay, you just did this epic thing, and, you know, wherever you had decided to go, like, whatever it is you had decided to do, but it is sufficient in my mind that you would have leveled up, and you can still do it that way. I don't think you necessarily have to tie it into being, like, railroaded or a linear story at all.
Oh yeah, less railroading linear story, but in terms of like progression, like with the XP gathering side of things, your players can get stronger without necessarily achieving anything world affecting, I suppose. So if before they carry on, they want to get that cool new spell so that, you know, before they go and achieve the next big thing they're aware of. But again, I feel like it's kind of one and the same in a degree. I feel like the distinction is whether experience is just from killing things, right? Which I don't think is a very fulfilling way of doing experience in a game. Like, just by you've killed X amount of things, therefore you get this number. But
yeah, I think I'm kind of like on the same side as Griff here. Like, I think you need a balance of the both. And then that way, no matter what kind of player you are in the group, you're kind of appealing to everyone in that regard. And I also think that, yeah, like, it shouldn't just be based off the battle aspect. It should also be... like with the interactions and milestones and stuff like that, because it does help a person kind of develop their character a bit more and actually get into it.
Can I ask? Sorry, no, you go.
So then, you know, here's a question too. So if you have a situation where the party could bite something, should the encounter be encounter based experience, depending on how you, I mean, regardless of how you deal with it, whether you kill them or whether you pay them off, is that a better solution than just to say, hey, regardless of what happens here, as long as you win the encounter, you get the experience points?
I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's like, actually, if someone in the party uses their abilities to do something else that navigates around it, I feel like they're just as, they should receive the experience points just as much as someone who's, you know, killed everyone, because that's just what their character's good at. It's just using your skills available to you, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I almost even like the idea of almost like rewarding extra experience for really creative solutions to a problem, you know, because that almost, you know, rewards players for looking at a situation and, you know, a situation that could just easily be, oh, we just kill it and move on, and kind of like rewards more critical thinking and be like, yeah, we could just kill it and move on, but if we do this, it could be way more interesting. I don't know how you guys feel about doing that.
That feels a little bit tricky, only to me, because someone may have made a character because they just want to fight things, and then that character's almost penalized for playing that character. But that maybe your players just don't need to know how much experience they're getting, do they? I suppose, to a degree. They don't need to know that they would have got more or that they've received less for doing something, I suppose.
Well, I mean, even if they are a fighter, depending on how they fought, I mean, it could still count. Like, for instance, I had a player in my group who played, oh shit, I can't remember his name. What's the big dumb guy's name off Guardians of the Galaxy?
Oh, Drax.
Yes, he played a very Drax-like character, where he didn't understand idioms or anything of that sort. And he was always, even in the middle of battle, he was so perfect at playing it that usually the DM would reward bonus XP, which he would give if you played the character really well.
Yeah, and I don't think you necessarily need to penalize anybody either, you know, for not, you know, for playing the character that they built. I think it's just like a fun incentive to think outside of the box. And I'm not saying like whoever came up with the plan is the one who gets the bonus XP. I would have rewarded to the entire party for working together to make the plan a success.
Oh, we never work together. What are you talking about?
How are you alive?
Yeah, I've always, I do feel like that is the way of doing it. I feel like everyone in the party should receive, unless for some reason they have just separated themselves.
Well, that's the thing. We kind of had to, because like there are certain players in the group who would purposely try and derail the rest of the group.
That sounds like a much bigger problem than...
Yeah, we didn't have too many people taking it seriously.
That's when you ask the DM, how much XP do I get for killing them?
Ooh. Well, that just depends on your alignment.
I don't know. I think you just flip into PvP mode, you know, Battle Royale.
Yes. Let's do it.
Stress relief moment, yeah. But yeah, I feel like experience is just is one of those ones that is kind of like, it's a behind the curtain thing, right? Like at the end of everything, you tell your players, here's this arbitrary number that goes towards this stat that will eventually make you better. And everyone has to acknowledge it. But in character, it's not a thing that's happening. Obviously, you're going through the motions as your character. So the only danger would be if it then starts to affect the role playing of the person, because they think, if I try and find a more obtuse way of dealing with this, sometimes they might actually ignore a simple, effective route because they feel like they're not going to get the most out of the encounter. And obviously that's a very meta thing, and a lot of people are different on that. But that's mm-hmm. just where I worry about like bonus experience for things. Like for me, it becomes in a worry of like, am I actually clouding their judgment a little bit because they know that I'm dangling that carrot.
Well, not only that, but let's face it, there are plenty of people out there that their definition of role-playing is rolling those dice, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's the type of game they like to play. And I would hate to penalize people like that. I don't know. Does anybody here play any organized play games at all?
No.
Okay. Yeah, I do both Pathfinder Society and occasionally the Adventure League. Okay. So you get a large variety of people playing, and one week you'll have one table, and next week you may have a different table, depending on what you're playing. Like, I think the Adventure League, normally the people you sit down with on one week, you're sitting down with several weeks in a row, if not for the whole campaign. With the Pathfinder Society, though, it can change from game to game.
Wow.
Yeah, that sounds cool, actually.
So, but then you get the variety of people too. You have some people that can't role play with a darn, or they're just very quiet.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. But then that always comes back to, you know, just kind of talking to each other before the game, you know, even if it's different people week to week, just, you know, getting kind of a small feel for, okay, who are you? Why are you here? Like, what is it you're looking for out of this game? And just kind of knowing that, like, you know, for me, the groups I've always played in have always been interested in finding unique solutions to things. I mean, you know, I'll never forget when my group that I play with took over an entire gambling ship that was highly guarded just through persuasion checks and clever uses of, like, disguise self, you know. So for us, that was a cool thing to do. It's not for everybody, though. So it, you know, it all comes down to knowing who you're playing with.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
That's the dynamic thing about it, isn't it? I did want to ask with the milestone one, because like I say, I kind of use a little bit of each. With your milestones, are you a case of, is it sort of a thing of you will just sort of say, okay, you've achieved a level up because you have done this, like this thing, or are you still following numbers and granting actual like XP numbers? So, you know, half a level's worth or a third of a level or whatever.
Well, for us,
go ahead.
I was going to say, just for us, we still do it the number-based way just because it is just simplistic and no room for arguments or anything like that. Just follows a strict rule.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to work out, and it also kind of keeps the party in balance.
And I think as far as, you know, milestones go, you can still break it up and have a hybrid of different types of different encounters you go to have an XP potential. And then when, like, for instance, you're trying to attack the castle and take it over and defeat the Lich Lord who's there. Well, you know, a milestone might be that you've breached the walls. Another milestone may be you've taken the keep, and the third milestone may be you've finally overthrown the Lich Lord who's there. But then you could also do it with the hybrid, say, well, these different encounters throughout here, depending on, I mean, not really. Are you saying, you know, fighting, you get one XP and thoughtfully you get another XP? It's just saying, you know, if you overcame this encounter, however you did it, you get X experience points for that encounter. And then if you decide not to go to that encounter, well, that's just, you know, you don't get that XP at all.
That does kind of make me think of planning encounters almost like levels to a degree, you know, at the end of a video game where you get your level and it shows you your side objectives. Did you complete these things? You know, doing, like you say, like a castle assault where at the end your experience is granted you based on these are your main objectives and these are your sub-objectives, stuff like that. That's quite an interesting way of looking at it from a DM's point of view, you know.
Well, look at it like video games.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious to actually try it out that way. So, Tim, if you're listening, I know you are. We need to make a group and we need to try out this milestone kind of method.
Yeah, Tim, get your shit together, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck Tim. God.
Whoa. Let's dial it back a little bit. Wow.
No. I'm serious about this. I want it to happen.
Speaking of being serious about things, that was a great topic, Larry. Thank you for bringing that to us.
Yeah, definitely.
I feel like all of us could probably talk about RPGs forever because we are all super into, you know, the tabletop scene. But I want to get serious about something for a second. A couple weeks ago, I did a Twitch stream where I went ghost hunting with my friend Quinn, who it was his idea to do. He's like, hey, we should totally do this. We should stream this. I'm like, yeah, sounds cool. So I bought some equipment and went out there. But it made me think, I was like, you know, this would be a good podcast topic. And the topic is, do you believe in ghosts? And what are you guys' thoughts? Like, is that something that you guys believe in? Is it something maybe that scares you? Like, Griff, what about you over in Britain where you have a lot of really old graves and stuff like
we
that?
We can't move for ghosts over here. It's just, there's so much history. It's just, personally, I do not, but they are one of my favorite things in a way. I used to watch a lot of ghost hunting shows because I'm intrigued beyond like all reason by it. But I personally do not believe in ghosts.
So that brings an interesting dichotomy there. So you don't believe in ghosts, but you like watching the shows. So what happens when they like, quote unquote, find a ghost? Are you just like, oh, poppycock, or like, how does that work?
Well, because generally they're using like, no. Yeah, because obviously poppycock is very common vernacular over here.
Obviously.
But no, so there was a show over here called Most Haunted. I think I might have even mentioned this on the podcast before.
Yeah.
And the way that show worked was they would have a medium, a presenter, and a skeptic, like, who would be, I'm going to use quote-unquote scientists, because I don't know if they were actually accredited in anything, but they would be the ones that would be like, okay, there's electrical current, and actually if we scan this wall, there's some wires or whatever. I don't know, they'd do all the recording and stuff. I think sometimes it's interesting, even if you don't believe in something, to admit that something can't be explained. I think that's kind of interesting, and then it's like, okay, well, can we find out what it is?
I think that's the thing, like, especially when you view things from a scientific point of view, is accepting that you don't know everything, right? So finding the answer was what always interested me.
So for you, it's less like an episode of like ghost hunting and more like an episode or like a really dark, bad episode of This Old House.
I do not know what This Old House is.
I mean,
it's a fixer-upper show.
Oh, okay.
They take old houses and fix them up.
Yeah.
No, not really. Like, because there was a lot of times in that show where they would go like into literally old ancient castles or whatever, or like underground catacombs. And a lot of it as well is the whole psyche thing. Like, if a load of you go into a really dark, cold, misty, spooky place. We spoke about this before with when we were doing like local legends and things. How if you were to go to that road at night in your car with your windows down and drive slowly, you are creating the perfect like scenario to be open to experiences. And I feel like that's a really important part of it as well. Like how it's fun and exciting and scary. And we kind of thrive on that adrenaline.
Which incidentally, as a throwback to our first episode, that's actually where I did go ghost hunting. I went to Proctor Valley Road in San Diego, which is where I talked about for my local, spooks and haunts.
Yeah.
And fun fact about that, before we left, we said, okay, so here's the things we do not get out of the car for. And one of them was the ghost of the hitchhiker woman in the white dress, or blue dress, depending on who you ask. And so we're like, okay, fine. If we see that, we're just going to keep going. Now, I have zero regard for my own life. So as we're driving, my buddy, like, his face just, like, freaks out, and he's like, oh my god, I think I saw something white out of the corner of my eye. I'm like, let me out.
Yep.
He's like, no. He's like, are you crazy? We promised we were not going to stop for that. I said, I gotta go. He's like, what are you gonna do? I'm like, I'm gonna go tackle that bitch. I am finding that ghost and I'm gonna bring her down.
I'd have a blue dress and a trunk and a wig.
Okay, well, hey, now we're talking.
I'm sort of viewing that situation like in a Jurassic Park when they're all getting out of the car to go see the Triceratops, and it's just one person left in the car. Like, well, now I'm in a car talking to myself because you just run off after this ghost.
Just play Leopard Hitchhikers at that point.
Yeah. It's interesting, right? Like that thrill of like you want to chase it and find it. Like I feel like that's what I would be as well. I'd do the same.
X-Files.
Well, hell yes.
Yes. Freaky, what are your thoughts on this?
I definitely believe in ghosts. It's just one of those things that when I was younger, you don't want to believe, but you have these experiences that you just can't help but not deny it. So one of these in particular, it happened on Christmas Eve. And as people may or may not know, my father passed away in 2006. And Christmas was such a big thing for him. And this was one of the years where it was like the first time where Christmas was kind of starting to feel normal again for us. And we were sitting as a family in the living room and we're just watching, I can't remember, it was probably the Trailer Park Boys Christmas special. And we're sitting all calm, which is rare for my family on a holiday, and just getting along in general. And we have these lights and they have those switches, like the faders on them. And as we're sitting there, the lights slowly fade down and then slowly fade back up. And we all see it at the same time and no one says anything until finally we're like, did you just see that? And we all just fucking freak the fuck out because it wasn't like a flash. It wasn't like something when the lights, you know, dim or anything like that. It was so slow and purposeful. And we just felt like it might have been kind of like dad saying like Merry Christmas kind of thing.
Yeah. That's somewhere where like sometimes that stuff can be like a comfort. Like I know my grandmother's convinced that her husband watches over the family. And my family's like very in, I don't want to say like into that stuff, but there's a lot of history in my family of supernatural, paranormal-y kind of stuff, which they would kill me if they knew I was talking about right now on the show, because it was always something we kept very hush-hush. But let's face it, I've seen some weird shit in my day. Like, I've seen I've seen things float across the kitchen. I have seen a small child running through a hallway. Like, I have seen some weird shit that I just can't explain. And at the time I tried to explain it, I tried to debunk whatever it was I saw, but there was nothing for me. So, I mean, I definitely, and it's funny because I'm not a religious person, don't believe in heaven or hell, but for whatever reason, I believe in ghosts. Only, I guess, because it's hard to discount the things you've seen with your own eyes.
Exactly. You
know? So, I'm always, like, wrestling with that idea of ghosts just based on my actual lack of belief system and all that shit. So it's always been a weird thing for me. Larry, what about you, man?
You know, I think I'm kind of on the fence about it. You know, I've been to lots of places that have been haunted, whether it was, you know, New Orleans, Savannah, you know, Boston. I haven't ever seen anything. But that's not to say that I don't completely disregard that it isn't a possibility. You know, I think if I went to I've seen some of those shows and they said this is the most haunted house in the United States, all sorts of things happen here, I think I'd be a little freaked out just to go inside for a while, especially in the middle of the night with no lights on or something. But so I think I would not do that trip, but I wouldn't mind some of the less haunted places to go into and just to kind of see. But I tell you what, man, if I see one, I'm probably out the door.
You don't necessarily believe in them, but like the idea of them does terrify you, it seems.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I think it'd be one of those things you'd have to kind of see with your own eyes, see what was going on. If I had like a Ghostbuster moment with the librarian, I'd be out the door. I think if it was something else where it was just kind of floating there, I might just watch it and just kind of go like, okay, what am I seeing? You know, how much did I have to drink tonight? I would be interested in seeing one as long as it wasn't after me.
Does anyone else have like a set of rules?
How so?
I have a rule set that, because like I said, when I was little, I wanted to deny the existence of ghosts so much because I was scared of them. And so I have rules that, like, if you're going up the stairs at night, don't look behind you. Because in the horror movies, that's what happens is, like, you're creeping up the stairs, you see it, or you hear a noise, you slowly look behind you, and that's when it gets you. Or, like, if you're brushing your teeth at night, don't, like, look down, spit, and then look up in the... Don't look directly at your reflection because something could be behind you. Just avoid all those like horror movie stereotypical scenes and then it can't get you because they never jump out at someone who is ignoring it. It's always just as they turn around.
No, I don't have anything like that. Like,
I feel like I've always done the opposite. I feel like I would die because I do that.
Well, but that's the thing is like, I don't know. Like they don't scare me at all.
Yeah,
you know, and I don't know if it's because like I've spent so much time like around that kind of stuff and seeing weird shit where I'm like almost like, oh, I'm just not alone today. Okay, well, make yourself comfortable, I guess. I don't know if I can kick your ghost feet up and don't spill on the couch, like I don't know. It's just they don't like the idea and the concept of ghosts don't really scare me. Like when we went out ghost hunting, you know, at no point was I ever like, oh man, if we see something, I'm going to freak the fuck out. I'm like, if I see something, I'm going to go try to give it a hug.
Because
it can't do anything to you, really. Like, we watch a lot of scary movies and shit like that, but how many times have you heard about somebody really getting attacked by a ghost?
Well, it depends if you believe the stories or not.
Right, but even if you believe the stories, how many of those stories are really out there?
Lots. Where they, like, get... attacked and scratched and bit and raped and
pushed. I mean, I'm good with the first few of those things. That last one there, I'm good with not experiencing. But like, if all it's gonna do is scratch and bite me, like I've been stabbed in the leg before. I can take a ghost bite. I think I'll be okay.
I think that's the only thing you think, because when you were saying about like staying in a place, I was like, do you know what? Like, I wouldn't not stay in a place because I thought like it might be haunted. I'd not stay in a place because of the situation. Like, if I was with a group or something and we were doing it for fun and it was an enjoyable situation, I'd absolutely go for it. But on my own, I'm not going to go stay in a creepy abandoned old house because there might be a human in there. And that's what I'm more worried about. Like, there might be an actual person in there with a real knife who is actually going to stab me with it. Like, you know.
And want to make you a ghost.
Exactly. Yeah. And then I'm like that quintessential ghost haunting the old dilapidated house. It's just, I don't want to be that cliche.
If only I had listened.
And you'll be a British ghost, so you'll just be very judgmental, or you'll sound very judgmental.
I'll be wearing like top hat and coattails.
Oh my god. Can we make you a ghost?
We can, yeah. I already have the pallid, pale skin for it, so it's fine.
Yes.
There's no sun over in this country.
I love making fun of your country. I'm sorry. I should do it less, but you just make it so easy with the shit you say.
No, you should be over here in Florida. We get all sorts of travelers from overseas. Pale as ghosts.
I think Bear's just still upset about Cluedo.
Fuck Cluedo. That's not a game. That's not a real thing.
It absolutely is.
Yeah, we actually get the same thing over here in San Diego, Larry. A lot of very pale visitors.
Are you making fun of Canadians now?
Mm-hmm. I mean, does anyone really have to make fun of Canadians? Isn't that a joke in and of itself?
Eh?
Oh, that's what you want to fight about now, eh?
See, you did that one on purpose.
Yeah, I did.
You're really leaning into that whole, Canadian vernacular over there.
I'm just trying to embrace it now.
You might as well. You've been fighting it for long enough.
Enough people on Twitter apparently agree with you guys, so I guess I just really can't anymore.
Speaking of fighting, that was really good.
Oh, here we go.
Thank you, me. I'm really glad that me brought that to the table today.
Yeah, that was a great question. Beautiful.
Well done, Bear.
Thank you.
You're really getting good at this podcast thing.
Mini-me.
It's like you've done this before.
I'm never going to be good at it. I just literally just shit it out of my mouth. Like, it's horrible. Everything that happens on the show that I do is bad. But speaking of fighting, Shrieky, I believe you have a community submitted topic for us.
I do. This one comes from David Ortiz, and he wanted to ask us, PlayStation, Xbox, Nintendo, or PC, and why?
Now, I'm gonna let you take the lead on this one, Shrieky.
You
have to do that. So
take the gloves off.
Yeah.
Here it comes. Okay, so give me some time here because I'm making a compelling argument.
Oh god, here we go. Hang on, let me lean back with some popcorn.
All right. So my answer is Sony. And my reason behind this is because the Sony engineer, Ken Kutaragi, and I really hope I'm saying that correctly, he became interested in working with video games after he saw his daughter playing on Nintendo's Famicom. And so he took on a contract with Sony to develop the hardware, which would drive the audio subsystem of the Super Nintendo. So secretly, while he was doing that, he developed a chip known as the Sony SPC-700. So after the success of that project, Nintendo and Sony entered a partnership to develop a CD-ROM add-on for the Super Nintendo, which would play both the original cartridges as well as new games released in the Super Disc format. As per the agreement, Sony was allowed to develop and retain control over the Super Disc format. Nintendo, they didn't quite like this, so they sent the president of Nintendo of America and another executive to negotiate a more favorable contract with Philips, which was Sony's rival at the time. Bum, bum, bum. Sorry, dramatic effect. So in June of 1991, Sony proudly announced the release of the PlayStation, the first Super Nintendo compatible cartridge and CD console. But the very next day at this same event, Nintendo revealed its partnership with Philips, a surprise both to the public as well as Sony. So they kind of like stabbed Sony in the back there. So during this time, 200 to 300 prototypes of the original PlayStation were created. So they're out there and they are worth a lot of money. Apparently one just came, I think it was last year, the year before that, somebody revealed that they had one and created, I think, a YouTube stream to show what it was like. But anyways, in 1992, they reached a deal that Sony was allowed to produce Super Nintendo compatible hardware while Nintendo retained control and profit over the games. So after that, after Nintendo kind of stabbed them back and didn't want to continue any more partnerships with Sony, Sony's like, okay, screw you guys, we're going to create our own console. And that's the PlayStation we know today. So I just have to say PlayStation because I have a lot of respect that they got stabbed in the back. And instead of making this big deal, stomping their feet and having a tantrum, they're just like, fuck you guys, we're going to take over. And they did, in my opinion.
All right.
I feel like I don't have enough evidence to back up any answer I may or may not gotta give.
Yeah, I didn't have nearly enough prep time on this one.
Well, I was ready to do this last week, but I decided to forego my question for another one, so I was prepared for this.
So I really like that story. So there is, I forget the name of it now, which is really bad. I think it's like Game Dev Tycoon. There's a game dev simulator game out there that actually shows this arc happening as well. The fact that they one day release this joint console, and then literally the next day it gets cancelled.
Yep.
And it's kind of weird to think now, like the two may have worked together. Like, how different would games have been if that partnership had carried on?
No, exactly. Kind of makes you wonder where consoles would be, but at the same time, I'm so happy that kind of PlayStation did what they did. Because, I mean, Nintendo took a long time for them to finally switch back to the CD-ROM. It's like they were so stubborn and so stuck on their pride that they were like, no, no, it's going to be cartridges, fuck CD-ROM.
I enjoy Nintendo, but the word stubborn is absolutely a word that is synonymous with Nintendo.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, look at their last three consoles. Yeah, they're like, oh, everyone's making a console where you can play a game. Well, we're going to make it so you just waggle things around. Then it's, well, we've got a really shitty tablet. Now it's, well, it's kind of a handheld system too.
Yep.
Which is cool in theory. I don't know. I haven't been sold on a Nintendo console in many years. I mean, Nintendo was my jam growing up. You know, like the NES was where I cut my teeth. That's where that's what gave me, you know, the gaming bug bit me. And then, like, I actually remember that whole thing with Sony. I don't, like, remember it happening, but I was too young. But, I heard the stories about it and whatnot, and I'm kind of glad that didn't happen. Because Sony has given us such amazing consoles, you know? And that was, honestly, like, Sony doing its thing as, I think, what made Microsoft throw its hat in the ring and bring us the Xbox. If they were just kind of following Nintendo's lead, I feel like we would have all sorts of weird peripherals around our houses. And it would look like a, you know, Willy Wonka, but for gaming in our living rooms. So, you know, I'm kind of glad that Sony did its own thing. We have some, you know, traditional consoles. Nintendo can do its thing. And I'm glad that the Switch is doing well, even if I have little to no interest in it. But I guess since I'm talking, I'll say, you know, PS4 is my favorite console of all the things I have. And I do actually have a laptop that can run good PC games. Some very interesting, unique games that you can only get on PC. There's the PS4 that I have. I have the Xbox One. The only thing I don't have is the Switch because I couldn't justify buying one to myself. But out of all my consoles, the PS4 and, you know, in my laptop, the PS4 definitely gets the most play, the most love. The Xbox I rarely turn on. It's really just my exclusive machine. The laptop, you know, it's fun. There's games that are fun, but like when I think to myself, I'm going to play a game, I'm grabbing that PS4 controller. Mainly because, for one, I like the new controller. I've always liked the DualShock, but I actually used to like the Xbox controller better. But the DualShock 4 just really feels, you know, hefty and quality in my hands. I like the touchpad that has all the, basically it's like a multifunction tool on the front of your controller, which is nice.
Yeah.
And just the quality of the console itself is just, you know, it's never been in question. It's always worked perfectly for me since I got it. And the upgradable hard drive, which was really, really nice. So I didn't have to have an external attached to it. I've got 2 terabytes in that bad boy, and I'm thrilled.
Have you tried any of the VR stuff?
Yes, I actually do have a PlayStation VR. And it is, man, Resident Evil 7 in VR is terrifying.
Oh my God.
I'm not the kind of person that gets scared of things. But there was a few times I screamed like a girl, and I am not ashamed to admit it.
I remember when Resident Evil 1 came out.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, that game when you walk down that first corridor and it's that
oh, my God.
That,
yes.
Like, cracked, like, zombie face. Oh, chills to this day.
With the dogs, too.
Yeah, when you're trying to go out the front door, right?
No, the hallway.
Walk the hallway and they jump through the window.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man. I tell you what, that no game has instilled in me fear of slowly opening doors like the first Resident Evil until I played Amnesia, and those doors are physics-based as well, so you have to, like, actually motion to open them. And games seem to be doing this more and more now, where you're in control of how quickly you open a door.
Yes.
It's a simple mechanic, but it really freaks me out.
Yep.
Yeah.
I love that about The Last of Us right now.
Oh, yeah. I need to play that actually.
Oh, you so do. It really is.
Because I also have PS4. That is my console of choice. But I'm PC is my primary. My PS4 is basically YouTube, Netflix, Now TV, that sort of stuff.
My God,
and
it's being wasted.
Maybe if no. I want to, like I say, I've got Prey. I picked that up on there. I've got Resident Evil 7 to play through. Bloodborne, my favorite game of all time. Like, that's why I bought the PS4. If I were going to buy another one, it would be the Switch, not an Xbox One, because Zelda, pretty much. No other game will make me buy a console like that franchise will, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, there's always that one game that makes you want to buy.
Mm.
That's true, yeah.
And maybe one day they'll release like a console Pokemon game, and I'm not too ashamed to admit that I would still, again, I would buy a console for that.
No, I would buy a Switch for that. I will say that if they came out with a Pokemon game, like a legit one, not like one of these like,
exactly,
Mystery Dungeon bullshit games.
Yes.
But, you know, they came out with like a legit Pokemon game. Yeah,
imagine open world
yeah,
Pokemon.
Oh, God.
Just kill me now, because it's never going to happen, I don't think. And that's, oh.
That'd be like video game Viagra for me. I would never not be hard again. Like, just the thought of that excites me.
The thought of you getting excited excites me, Bear. So.
I need more than a moment. I'm not a one-pump shop over here.
Jeez. Oh, man, just being on the podcast with all of you is doing it for me, so.
I feel like this podcast is slowly devolving into just like a constant orgy.
Wait, isn't it? Always? Already?
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was nude podcasting.
I mean, no one said we have to wear clothes. I mean, no one can see.
I didn't. I didn't see any dress code.
I mean, I literally just rolled out of bed and pulled up to the laptop, and I sleep in the buff, so, you know.
Mm. Oh.
There we are, learning things about Bear.
There we go.
Oh, my.
Bear.
What about you, Larry? What's your console or you know, just way to play games? What's your favorite way?
Well, you know what's funny is... I used to sell video games systems way, way, way back when all the stuff was going on. So, you know, I got to see all the new Nintendos and the PlayStation come out and Xbox and all that stuff. And as far as I started on PC games way back when, and I think one of the scariest games at the time, they came out with a Ravenloft PC game. And it was one of the first ones that came out that was more action-oriented instead of the little moving pixels on the screen. The little guy moving across the screen or whatever. This was actually walking through corridors, much like Doom or something. And they had all sorts of sound effects going on. And I thought that was the creepiest thing at the time. But and then, of course, games have gotten scarier since then. You know, that's kind of a complex question, because I love the complexity of a PC system, because I tend to think in general, depending on the type of game, especially like a role-playing game, you're probably going to get a lot more in-depth control with your computer than you will on the PlayStation or Xbox or Nintendo. But other types of games, there's the speed and the smoothness and the player interaction that you get on some of these consoles can be quite nice. And I think those console systems have an edge to the PCs in that regard, plus the controllers that they have. There's some really awesome controllers out there, and I know they make them for the computer too, but I tend to think that like your fighting games, your shooting games, stuff like that, you just get used to that feel of the controller for even like the Xbox or PlayStation.
Yeah, I've noticed when you try to use those controllers with a PC, I know it works really great for a lot of people, but for some reason it just loses something in translation for me. I don't know if it like feels like there's like a slight lag or something to it, but it doesn't feel the same. I don't get the same feedback like I do from a console when I use it with a laptop.
Well, there's a lot of games out there too that aren't compatible with controllers, like Mass Effect, for instance.
Yeah.
If you buy that on Steam, no, Origin, I think it's on Origin. If you buy it, you can get fan-made mods for the controllers, but they made their own button layout. It's not the same as in the game. and that just messed with me completely. I cannot play it on the PC for that reason.
But now if you go with a simulator, where you're doing a flight simulator or you're doing a racing simulator or something with a PC, I mean, all the cool options you can get, I mean, you've got joysticks and throttle controls and foot pedals and everything else. I mean, shoot, you know, you can get even a cockpit.
So, that would be cool.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I remember one of my favorite games growing up was like, God, was it Flight Simulator like 98?
Microsoft, yeah.
Yeah. And my dad had like the flight stick with a throttle and everything like that. Yep. Like he was super into it. And I just remember like I couldn't get the plane off the ground very well. And I certainly couldn't land. But it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, those were difficult.
How many times did you try to land it incorrectly?
Every time.
Yeah. You know, no, see if you could land it right on the nose tip.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even, I mean, but to me, I think that experience on a PC is probably going to be far superior than you would get with a console system.
I can agree with that.
I love its accessibility, isn't it? You said they're like shooters and stuff with a controller. I can't play any shooters with a controller because my initial experience of them was the original Call of Duty on PC. Mm-hmm. So I find it infuriating trying to aim with an analog stick because I'm used to keyboard and
more
mouse.
Precision. You know?
Precision from a mouse, exactly. And I can't do it. But the majority of people now, their first experience of any game will be on a console because it's so much easier to pick one up. You know the game's going to run. You know it's going to run at the intended rates and performance and things like that. And it might not necessarily look as good as peak PC, but you don't have to worry about fluctuations and things like that. So it's so much easier to go and buy it ready to go and get the experience that you're kind of intended to get. Whereas PCs can be frustrating if it goes wrong. I don't know, like mine, I put mine together a couple of years ago and I very rarely get issues because it is stable, you know, I've got it where I need it to go to. I have a lot less issues than I think people would imagine you would get on a PC. But,
or maybe you're just one of the lucky ones.
I don't think you're looking at enough porn.
I don't think you know how much porn I'm looking at. Good stuff. I don't know. I think it is a difficult one. PC is absolutely my favorite thing. But if I was starting from scratch, it would be so intimidating.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a console's way more accessible with that kind of stuff. And that's one of the reasons why I've always been a console gamer. It took me forever to actually get a PC and have one custom built that could run the things that I wanted it to run. And knock on wood, so far I haven't had any real major issues with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm having some because it's got two hard drives in there and it turns out they don't play well together. So that's been a fun challenge lately for me.
Now, what do you guys think about the cell phone video game market? It's an emerging market.
Hate it.
Yeah.
I think it's its own thing. I think it's negative because it's now impacting the other markets of video games. As its own thing, it's fine, but microtransactions should have stayed on the mobile platform, you know. They shouldn't have come into full-price games, but it has, and so now it's a negative. But people like to trash on them, but they're for when you're on the train and you've got 10 minutes to spare, you know, and you can't get into Final Fantasy 15, you know, because you just don't have the time to do it. It's not my bag, but I understand its place, I guess.
I mean, I can understand people liking them, but, like, I literally just don't, like, have fun playing them. And I don't know if it's because of just how limited a touchscreen is, like, as far as controls go. But, like, they're too simplistic for me to, like, actually have any real fun with. It's like, oh, tap this. Okay, well, not tap that. Well, over there. I'm like, well, this is fucking boring. I should be getting Twitter, talking to people, because this is fucking lame.
See, the thing is, though, is that with the initial console market versus the PC market, that was the same problem that the consoles had versus the PCs initially.
Touchscreens?
No. I mean, just in general, the interaction with them and how they're not getting enough interaction with them.
There wasn't a lot of options. I was talking about the touchscreen thing. I knew what you were talking about. Sorry.
Yeah. So, but I'm saying, you know, right now, I think it's just an emerging market. And if they start making other options available with the screens, like let's say, you put your, not Google Glasses, but something similar to that on, And now your phone is just as powerful as your laptop is when it comes to video, and has plenty of space on there for some of the bigger games. You know, 5 years down the road, you know, that could be an option. 10 years down the road,
maybe. I don't know. Like, maybe I just feel like, because like, if I want to play like a real game, and I know it's gross for me to say a real game, but like, if I want to play like a game with like, you know, multiple controls and shit, I've got a 3DS, I've got a Vita, I've got ways to do that. I understand most people want to try to just do that on their phone, you know, as a convenience thing, but I can't help but feel like phones will never have the right kind of infrastructure to be able to do the same kind of thing that a dedicated little handheld will be able to do.
And that's where, like, outside peripherals and stuff come in. I mean, I think it's pretty amazing that if I wanted to, I could get, like, you know, any of the old Final Fantasies and play them on my phone. So, or anything like that now, like the fact that you can get emulators and all these things to help you do that. I do know what you mean. I carry my 3DS around in my bag. If I want to, like, sit and play a game, I'll play friggin' Pokemon for a bit. So, again, it doesn't really fit my space for it. It's just when it starts breaching into other areas that I have an issue with it. It's like they have, you know, but I do think phones are so not infinitely powerful. That's definitely not a thing that they are. But when you compare them to the original games consoles, I mean, your phone now can do so much more than they ever could. So the ability to play good games is absolutely there. I mean, A Link to the Past, one of my favorite games of all time, was done on the SNES, you know, and that, if you compare that to the power of your phone, there's nothing. So, but yet it still endures as one of my favorite games of all time. So evidently it's not a thing with the phones being good enough to do it. I suppose it's just utilizing them in a way that actually connects with us. And maybe that's difficult to do when it's like a glass screen and you're tapping and there's no, like, that button click is not there. Tangible feeling.
That wasn't Nintendo looking into the phone?
I think so. I do remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're doing a couple things. They got like that Mario Endless Runner game out there, mm-hmm. and I want to say they have something for Animal Crossing out there. I just don't know.
Yeah, what probably Animal Crossing, that's coming out.
I believe so. Thing.
Yeah. So it is something they're working on, but
I think puzzle games are where it really excels, though. When you can spend 5 minutes just really kind of
teasing
yourself or whatever.
Those are fine. But I consider those more like distractions than games, even though I guess technically they're games.
Well, like Riff said, they're great for if, like, you're sitting on the bus, train, doctor's appointment, and you just want to pass a few minutes. I'm okay playing for them for that. But like B said, like, it's just clicking and pointing. So after about, like, say 15, 20 minutes, I'm already sick of it.
Damn, it takes you that long? Like 5 minutes? I could literally be staring at a wall and it'd be more fulfilling.
It just depends what you're trying to get out of the game, doesn't it? If I'm at home, I'm not going to play on my phone. I'm going to play on my PC or my console. But if I'm out and I don't have access to that stuff and I've got 20, 25 minutes to kill, I'll download a new game and I'll see what it's about, I suppose. It's just different situations, different tools for different situations. But it definitely does not win the console war by any stretch.
No. Oh, God.
It's not even involved. It's on the sidelines. Just like, I'm also here. And then it gets blown up by a nuke. It's just, you know.
Well, That was a great topic. Thank you, David, for bringing it to us. Definitely, David actually has a little, I'm going to give him a little plug here. He's got a Veed Films Productions. You can find him on iTunes. He's doing a Star Wars audio drama, which is really awesome. They released their second episode around New Year's. So definitely make sure to check him out. Thanks again for the topic. And with that, thank you so much for joining us today on the Thread Raiders podcast. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Captain Sugar Bear. That's at CPT Sugar Bear. I'm also doing the Twitch thing now. That's twitch.tv/CAPT Sugar Bear because I screwed up and forgot the login for CPT Sugar Bear. And also running a game of Dread on Twitch on Mondays. That's at twitch.tv/TravisNet. And just doing everything. I'm doing guest spots. I just joined Nerdarchy on their channel, on their YouTube channel, for an hour-long chat, which was really nice. And I've got a couple other guest spots coming up that I can't quite talk about just yet, but hopefully soon. Shrieky, where can we find you? What are you doing?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Shrieky. That's S-H-R-I-E-K-E-E. You can also find me on DeviantArt under the same name. And as well, DaQueen Gaming and I will be doing some gaming streaming here soon with Diablo 3, so look out for that soon.
And what channel is that going to be on, do you know?
I'm not entirely sure. I think it's going to be on Dax Gaming channel or his Twitch So I'm not exactly sure what that is right now, but we will be announcing it on Twitter soon.
Sounds great. Griff, what are you working on? Where can we find you?
I am working on just back to streaming, really. This last week I would have started streaming again, so just keep popping by twitch.tv/Griffolion, which is GRYFFOLEON. Keeping on Twitter, I'm going to try and become a bit more active again. I'm now settled into this new job and life is kind of equalizing out a little bit, so I can actually get back to doing the things I like playing D&D, because it's been about a month and a half since I last properly played. So,
yeah,
getting that itch.
Yes, I get that.
They have a cream for that.
I don't want it though. I enjoy it. It's nice to feel alive.
Sweet Jesus. Larry, Mr. Larry, what are you working on? Where can we find you?
All right. Well, I'm a regular on Scribbler's Rest podcast, pretty much on all the different pod feeds and also on YouTube. And you can find me kind of everywhere under LJ Haydorn, which is kind of like, hey, dork, except with an N at the end instead of a K. So I'm on Twitter, Instagram, you know, you name it. I think under Facebook, I'm under Larry, though. Larry Haydorn instead of LJ Haydorn.
You're switching it up a little bit on us, trying to throw us off your scent.
And and I've got just a couple small works on as LJ Haydorn on Amazon. So Age of the Fallen, epic fantasy series.
Very nice.
Right on, right on. All right. Well, you can also find the podcast on Twitter, and that's at Thread Raider Pod. If you have any topics you'd like us to discuss, feel free to email us at raid@threadraiderspodcast.com. You know, you just want to say hi. If you want to say fuck you, then, you know, Heavy Metal Jesus is going to get all pissed off, and then he won't tell me fuck you this week, and then my week won't be complete. You can also go to threadraiderspodcast.com/contact us. It's a great contact page where you can submit topics and other such goodies that way as well. Also, make sure to like our Facebook page, join our Facebook community. It is small, it is humble, just like us.
On that note as well, don't forget, if you are a Reddit user, reddit.com/...
Oh, yes.
Thread Raiders.
Ooh. I always forget that just because I am not a Raider user, so I'm going to leave that to you for the future.
I'm keeping my eyes on it for now, just to see what's going down. Again, small it's but humble, me. But it all starts from somewhere, right?
Yes, exactly. Precisely, even.
Just like herpes.
What?
What?
Just keep spreading.
God. I heard that same sentence on PornTube earlier. Anyway.
That's too bad.
Sharing is caring.
No.
I am so sorry to be leading into our community submission with herpes and spreading it. But here we are. I really hope that Michael, the storyteller, is okay with that. But we are at the segment of our show where we highlight members in the community who are working on awesome projects. Give them a little love. And this week we do have the Steamrollers Adventure Podcast. This show is awesome. The openings especially are great, with, you know, Robbie the Robot and Michael just kind of shooting the shit talking. They actually did a bumper for our show a few episodes ago, which was still one of my favorite things that anybody has ever recorded ever, including us. It's better than us. I'm not ashamed to admit. It was hilarious. You can find their Twitter at Steamrollers PC. That's STEAMROLLERSPC. Make sure to just go over there, say hi. Just, you know, great account to talk to. We talk all the time. Fantastic. I've actually done a little bit of voice work for their show too. Just a wee bit. But it was fun, you know, getting to do that. You can also go to their website. That's RiggsStories.com. That's RIGGS Tories. That Tories was for you, by the way, Griff. .com. That's right. A little colonialism love here. But seriously, it's a great show. The cast is fantastic. The stories are phenomenal. It's just super interesting. Great series. Love what they do. So yeah, that's my little community plug. What do we want to end with here? I know we always like to say something at the end, so instead of asking what it is...
Where's the kaboom?
Well, if anyone would like to tell us your favorite console or PC and your reasons behind it, I would love to hear about it.
Yeah, and I want to know if you're afraid of no ghost, or if you're afraid of all the ghosts, or if you don't even believe in ghosts, or if you think
or who you gonna person. Or who you gonna call if you see a ghost.
I mean, you know, nobody probably. I don't think there's a service like that available.
I don't know. I'm seeing a lot of Ghostbusters around.
Yeah, that's a movie. That's a fiction.
No, we have our local Ghostbuster, Joy.
Oh, shit, we do.
That's right.
All right, so call Joy. Yeah. What's her Twitter? Do you know where her Twitter handle is?
I think it's Sci-Hal. Sci-Hal. I think it's
S-A-E-H-E-L, right?
H-A-L or E-L.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry, Joy.
Joy, we are the worst.
We are the worst.
It's like, we are the children. In my head.
I could just look it up here quick. Quick. Keep distracting.
Oh, that's called vamping. That's a podcast thing. We haven't gotten to do that before.
Vamp.
We also do want to hear about your experience points. You know, how do you guys do experience points in your games? You know, do you have a preferred method? What have you found that works? What doesn't work? I'm sure Larry would love to hear about those on Twitter. Yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and I know I would. The show would. All of us would. And
yeah, I think especially Joy would love to hear it, which her Twitter handle is S-A-E-H-E-L.
Nice.
Swoop for the save so there.
I don't have a question or anything, so just say hi to me. Just or come don't. Over, just drop by, just say hello.
Or ignore him.
That's fine as well.
I feel bad for the Discord feed. Everyone was waiting for me to do a striptease. I couldn't seem to get my video working.
I need to wrap up so you can get in there. It's can get this going.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
The show hasn't ended yet. No music yet. Damn it. Putting the kibosh on this shit.
Is there a musical number at the end?
Always. Oh, God,
always. It is the most facepalm-inducing shit for me. But
well, it's not that bad.
It's really bad. With that, we are out.
This is where it comes.
Solo.